Fifth Wrist is by the community for the community. We would love you to join the crew via our group chat on Slack. Email us at contact@fifthwrist.com and join the movement.
Welcome to Piece Unique for Fifth Wrist Radio, a new show focused on the artistry, technique, and lore of watch modding. I'm your host, Matt, and with us tonight is a very special guest, Ron, but you might know him better by his Instagram handle, Red5Watchwork. So welcome to the show, Ron. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm great. Thanks for having me.
And a quick, maybe even location check too. Like I'm in the West Coast of the United States, and it's 4 in the afternoon. Ron, where are you? What part of the world are you located in?
I'm in the mountains of Southwest Virginia on the Tennessee border.
Sounds beautiful.
It is 7 something here, and we're awaiting a winter storm, which is great.
Well, best of luck. I don't know how people survive those things. I'm really confused by it, but I hear that millions of people just do all right. So I'm a very very sensitive Californian. I can't handle that kind of stuff.
Well, we're used to it, so we'll be okay.
No, that's good. So if you haven't checked out Red5Watchworks on Instagram, in my opinion, you're the preeminent custom dial maker, laser engraver in the modding space. Maybe the world. Oh, wow. I don't know.
I'm sure there's somebody out there.
Maybe. And there's a couple like amazing people out there, but I just think like you're consistently making really cool things, and you can tell that you put a lot of effort into it, and it's just purely out of love. This isn't your business. This is just like a passion of yours. And I love that kind of stuff. I think that's what's so great about modding is you get a lot of incredible artists that are really just creating just for the love of it. And it's not like not a economic endeavor. So, before we like jump into your story and everything, let's do a quick wrist check. So, what have you got on your wrist today?
I have my Crystal Times TST tuna case, and it's got one of the dials that I made 14 dials for Crystal Times.
Oh, wow.
There are 2 variations. My son has one that's the prototype, and then I have the other. And I love these TST tuna cases. There's a neat backstory with those if anybody wants to research that. The money for these, we got permission to use the logo from One Ocean Research. You've probably seen them on Shark Week.
So
teamed up with Jeff at Crystal Times, made some dials, and he sold those things and donated all the money to One Ocean Research.
That's awesome.
So this one's kind of special to me. It's kind of neat. I love it.
That's really cool. And what's the, we only do audio, so could you describe the dial? And I can't even quite tell. Yeah.
So it's, if you can Google One Ocean Research, and they have, their logo is a turtle.
Uh-huh.
And I don't have my reading glasses on, but there's a whale, a dolphin inside the turtle with their logo. And I actually found some, I think it was just clip art, and made the hour indexes are an octopus, a dolphin.
Nice.
Starfish.
Dang, you covered all your bases with that one. That's amazing.
It was just neat to be a part of it. I was glad I got to do it.
That's awesome. Well, coincidentally, I do own one of your dials, as I mentioned earlier, but it's in the shop, so to speak. I need to kind of doing a little hand swap on it. But coincidentally, I'm wearing a Seiko Save the Ocean SRPC 91 dial, which, gosh, it's the Manta dial, the kind of lighter Manta dial. And it's in this bead blasted case that I just traded for someone. This super cool, this like custom bead blasted case. So
I love this dial.
Gosh, it is just shimmers in the light. It's amazing. Seiko really knocked it out of the park with that one, if you ask.
Yeah, they make a lot of cool stuff.
Drink wise, I've got I just have some guava juice and I put some brandy in it. I'm just like, I'm kind of in a, it's been a rush type of day. I'm still kind of in the middle of things, but I felt like I had to have at least a little bit of libation. What about yourself?
I just have water in this University of Tennessee Go Balls cup.
Nice. Excellent. That's awesome.
Tennessee grad, so I have a lot of UT things.
Nice. That's cool. That's awesome. Great color scheme, UT. Yeah, one of the best.
Agreed.
So, yeah, I guess, you know, let's start with, I mean, we could start with, like, what got you into watches and what led you to creating all these really cool metal works.
Well, I don't really know one particular thing that I can point to that got me into watches, but I've just really been fascinated with them my whole life. I got a Timex watercolor that I still own from my uncle for Christmas in like, it was probably like 4 or 5. And so I wore that thing. I still have it, still works.
That's great.
And
just keeps on ticking.
Oh, yeah. From then on, you know, I'm a 70s kid, so we didn't have smart watches. So we, everybody had a quartz watch.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a lot of quartz watches, and my dad had some, he had an older Rolex that I was kind of always fascinated with, the automatic movement and how that worked. So when I got a little older, I had some automatic watches, like Citizens and big Fossil. I had some Fossils, I think, with some generic, I don't know what they were, automatic movements. Of course, took those things apart. Always have just been a tinkerer, just anything that I could take apart, anything that I could try to modify, I did it. I took my TV apart when I was a kid, put that thing back together.
And it worked still?
It did.
Impressive.
I did the remote control car scene where you know, buy the kit, build your own cars.
Yeah.
I was heavy into that. Models, model airplanes, just anything that you could create from parts or modify. I've just always been fascinated with it. And so in, I think it was 2000, it may have been 2001, I bought some older Seiko cases. And this was, you know, we not a lot of internet going on in 2000.
Right, right.
So I get on YouTube and you know, watch a few things when that came out. But that wasn't until like 03, 04 maybe. So I buy these big, thick wristwatch magazines and just read anything I could get about watches. And there was a guy named Bill Yao who... He came out with just a limited number of mod parts for the SKX 007, which is, I think, one of the greatest divers of all time. And so I sent a watch to Bill Yao, and he modified it for me. Wow. And I got that back, and then that just started it all. And
that's so
I bought some, got some other parts from Bill, did an Invicta, the Swiss model Invicta. It's kind of like the 8926, but it had a 2824 in it.
Oh, wow.
He had some sterile parts for that. And then I upgraded the SKX 007 that I had the Yao parts in, made some changes to that. But I'd get these old 007s back when you could buy them for, you know, $80, 75, $80. And file down the crown guards, reshape the cases, and did a lot of, you know, just really just tinkering. That's what I've always liked to do. So
yeah. Yeah.
That started it all. And then in the mid 2000s, I'll buy these, they had, kits on eBay, and it was like a Flieger style case with the Seagull or Hangzhou, clone of the ETA 2824. I'm sorry, the ETA 6498 or 6497. So I would buy those kits and just build my own watches out of those kits. So, like, my cousin has the first one I ever made. He still wears it. It still works great, thankfully. But I made quite a few of those. And then we had kids. And so I have two teenagers. And kind of languished when they were little. And then the Seiko mod scene and all the parts just kind of exploded. So,
yeah,
that really just sucked me right back into the whole scene and really just took off from there. And you, like you mentioned earlier, it's my hobby, but I love it. It's my therapy. And so I just like having an idea in my head and making that into something you can hold it's functional, and you can, you know, it's beneficial.
Yeah.
So I just love having something materialized that you thought about. And that's just kind of, that's the fascination for me. It's the tinkerer. So.
Well, you know, a lot of us, you know, I totally agree. It's so cool to be able to, let's have a purple bezel insert with a green dial. That'll be cool. But you really took it, you know, to the next level. I guess it's, certainly I'm not interested in like filing down crown guards. So like already that's beyond me, but how did the laser engraving begin? Where'd that come from?
Well, I have a buddy that has a firearms business, and he's heavily into Cerakote and laser work. So, he got trained on the fiber laser and software called EasyCAD that we use.
Mm-hmm.
And he did some case backs for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd do the design work and he would do the laser work, and those things kind of really took off because not a lot of people doing those things. So I just got request after request after request for custom case backs.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just decided I'm going to buy my own laser.
Yeah.
Instead of borrowing somebody else's laser, because laser time's expensive.
Yeah.
So I bought my own fiber laser, and thankfully my wife was on board with that. But
nice.
They really, it's really pain to set up the graphics work.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a big learning curve.
Yeah.
But you really can make some fascinating things. So probably within 6 months of buying it, or maybe 6 to 8 months, it paid for itself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where that started. I started to make my own dials, really got it for doing case backs. And I play a lot of golf.
Mm-hmm.
So I made a lot of golf ball markers with it, and buy coin blanks basically. Would engrave those, gave some of those to my buddies, and that kind of took off for me.
Uh-huh.
I really like that. You know, there's not much warranty work involved with a golf ball marker. You've screwed it up. It's usually your fault.
Yeah.
So I like that aspect of that. But I started cutting my own dials, I guess. And made some basic skeleton dials and just simple things first. But
mm-hmm.
started working my way up kind of where I'm at now, where I'm doing some 3D stuff,
mm-hmm.
Some 3D modeling, and then I've translated that over to the watch stuff now. So that is my absolute favorite tool that I've ever owned. Period.
I mean, yeah. Tell me more about, I think it's kind of underappreciated, and I personally don't know a whole lot about like how difficult it is. Like I think the layperson is like, oh, it's the laser, and you just stick the metal there and the laser does the laser thing. So how is it difficult? What's the learning curve?
Well, a lot of people send me like concepts that they want, here's a photo, can you just make a dial out of that, or here's my design.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically a CNC machine. It follows lines.
Mm-hmm.
And you control the depth, how fast it moves, the frequency it cuts metal at. And if you don't set the graphics file up properly, like for people that use Illustrator or Inkscape, mm-hmm. if you have an open node, like a line that goes nowhere, or if you have crossing lines, it has no idea what to do with that. So mm-hmm. I get a lot of files from people that I just completely have to redo. So mm-hmm. I've got a few guys that buy stuff from me regularly, and they're really good now about sending me things that set up properly. But the graphic design aspect of it is simple, to make on a graphic in Illustrator or something like that if you have basic knowledge. But translating that over to a machine that has no idea what you want it to do, unless you tell it, then that becomes a lot more difficult.
Yeah.
And then if you want to do things in layers, like some of the things I posted lately are multiple layers.
Mm-hmm.
And so my goal with that is to shave off, for example, some of the things with a face, you might have one vector file that I've created that's just the tip of the nose. So you shave that layer off. Then you may go a little deeper and have the bridge of the nose, and you shave that off. Then you may have the base or the nostrils, shave that off. Mm-hmm. And that process takes forever because you're doing such thin layers, but then the result is incredible.
Yeah.
My only issue with them, like I did this sterling silver doll recently, and I've had probably at least 150 people message, "Hey man, will you sell one of those?"
Right.
And I haven't sold any of those. I did give one away, but the time invested in that makes it to where it's just probably not something that's viable because it would cost so much to sell.
Yeah.
To get back what I've got in it. So,
and for those who haven't seen these are these, like, they're insane. It's January 2023 right now. So they're on his Instagram. There are these, it looks like engine turned rose engine, guilloche, super shimmery, sterling silver dials. It's amazing. It's beautiful. This fan shapes, etc. Check them out.
Yeah, thank you. I'm going to have some of those rhodium plated soon too, so I'm hoping that works out really well.
Cool, that's awesome. Yeah, I guess the plating is such a thin layer that you still get all the definition.
You don't have to worry about the tarnish either. Right now, I put a protective clear coat on there, but it's still looks like silver, and people really don't expect that. So, you know, like a lot of white gold has a rhodium plating, and it's really durable. It doesn't tarnish. And so I thought I would try that. So
yeah,
fingers crossed. If it works, you'll see it on my Instagram.
people don't like the silver look that,
I think they're just used to, like, if you see a lot of things that are engine turned silver, they have a coating on that to stop the tarnish, or they have it not necessarily rhodium plated. There's several different jewelry coatings, usually a dip that you can put on silver to keep it from tarnishing. And so when you see a watch that, you know, quote, has a silver dial, a lot of times that's brass that's silver coated and then may have a protective coating on it. So I am trying to head that route. We'll see how it goes. But I hope it works. But, you know, adding rhodium plating to a sterling silver dial is going to put it into a price range that
I
probably don't want to go to.
Do you do plating, or do you have that equipment?
I do not. I'm researching that. But I have the ability to anodize titanium. I do that.
Oh, yeah.
Get a spectrum of colors anodizing titanium using a power supply and different voltages. So I mess with a lot of titanium. Some of that actually I've posted, some of it I haven't, but I love the blues you can get from titanium, but it's so difficult to work with. It doesn't really, like the grade 5 titanium sheets that I buy, it doesn't really like heat. So if you use max power on the laser, it instantly cuts. It just ruins it.
So I see.
You have to cut titanium on such low power that it takes forever to cut anything out of it.
So what's forever?
If I wanted to make a basic watch dial out of aluminum, that's say 0.4, 0.5 millimeters, then I could cut that completely out of a piece of 7075 aluminum sheet in probably less than 10 minutes. Now, that doesn't include the finish work or any painting or anything like that you have to do. To cut that same thing out of grade 5 titanium is probably 45 minutes to an hour, because you just have to, it has to go so slow on such low power.
And that's just to cut a circle out of the sheet, let alone skeletonize would be another hour or so.
If you want to do it right. Yeah.
Yeah. Is there any, some cupping occurs, is there some way to reflatten it with it and still have it look good?
You can, depending on what happens. Like a lot of times if you're cutting a center hole in a piece of titanium, it'll warp. So you can kind of hammer that out from the back, and it's just so much cleaner, and I'm not happy with it, so I just cut another piece usually.
I'm just like adding it all up, like, okay, so even 10 minutes to cut a circle out is, for a aluminum or
no the, other soft metals. You could cut a circle. I'm talking about a complete engraved out of aluminum. You could cut a circle out of aluminum in 30 seconds or less.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Well, still, it's like, yeah, it's not insane scale. Like 10 minutes for
it's not. Yeah.
Yeah.
And copper and brass are difficult because they conduct heat so well. You don't get any warp with copper or brass, but they're such good conductors of heat that they dissipate it. So you get similar cut times and engraving times with copper and brass because as soon as the light and the laser hits it, just dissipates. So
got it.
I just actually finished making a dial this evening that took about 3 hours to engrave. So
oh wow.
I'll send it to you when we're done so you can see it.
I'd love to check it out.
Yeah.
Do you have like a favorite metal to work with? I know you've done those anodized titanium ones and, you know, all the swirl, the clouds that are created are really beautiful. And I have a copper dial of yours that I love. I think it's like, it's this really cool cube pattern, but a favorite, do you have a favorite, a favorite metal?
I like heavy metal. not really. I really like the results of the titanium stuff because it's the only thing that you can achieve a color on without paint or some type of electroplating, because you're just changing the oxide layer on the titanium. So
yeah,
you can get a pretty cool range of colors. And I got into that because I collect knives too.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people anodize titanium, like their knife scales or the clip, their pocket clip.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so you can actually do that with 9-volt batteries and get a different color. Yeah. So use an acid to etch the titanium and get rid of the oxide layer.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you apply a certain range of voltage to it, it turns that oxide layer colors. So you can, it's really cool. And so if you've got some nasty acid, but I use this stuff called multi-etch. And you have to heat it. You have to boil it first. And then, so, I mean, it's toxic stuff. But it actually will eat the oxide layer of titanium in seconds. And then you can clean it and... based upon sandblasting, polishing, brushing, you get a really completely different finish based upon the voltage you use. So that's probably my favorite. If I have to pick one, I really like working with the titanium stuff. Mm-hmm. It's not a lot of people. I like to be different. Not a lot of people do things with titanium. So,
cool. Do you do any like case building or any kind of bigger works?
I don't. I'm messing with things like that. I actually designed a carbon fiber case and it made. Had five of them made, and that's cost prohibitive in the modding scene. So I stopped. Actually, I can't even buy them anymore. The company went out of business. But I have done some things in 3D design software, and I've actually designed a case. And I have made my own pocket watch case that would take like the NH35 movement on a lathe, but I have not learned how to do thread. I have not learned how to make threads yet. So I'm hopeful that I can learn, you know, threads, thread pitch, and actually make a case that will accept a case back. So, because I really want a pocket, I want a mod pocket watch.
I've actually just recently kind of got, I'm fascinated by these old pocket watches and guilloche and all the enamel dials. And let me see if I have it on my desk.
The movements are usually amazing.
The movements are beautiful, but, and I'm sure you're familiar with like fret clockworks and Vortec where they rehouse and they're beautiful.
Oh,
beautiful.
Yes. I actually, I'm on the Vortec mailing list, and they did a military watch around Christmas. And I saw it. I was like, oh my goodness, I'm buying that. And then I got the link and it's like $8,000.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not buying that.
maybe not. Yeah. So I'm also like, you know, I think they're so beautiful. So I actually recently, I put an old enamel Elgin dial on an NH35. And then I have this, I just bought this over the weekend, this old,
that's cool.
It was using a
I think it's called a brocade machine. It's kind of like a Rose engine, but it's a little easier for the operator. And so my plan is to either just mount this hole or
what size
maybe,
is it?
Maybe it's a little big. So I think I might end up kind of cutting it away, and I feel kind of bad, but these, they made millions and millions and millions of these pocket watches. So they're really easy to come by. This was only a few dollars to buy. I think it looks like it's about, like 38 millimeters to 42 millimeters.
It's kind of a lot of ETA 6497 cases.
I know. I'm Finso. You know, I've really just kind of done NH35 and the occasional solar mod, but it's like I'm really comfortable with this. It's movement. I know it works. It's easy. And the hands, being able to buy hands so easily. But maybe I should branch out a little bit.
I'm going to encourage you to try something with the 6497 or 98.
So that's a hand wound.
Yes.
Okay.
Hand wound manual wind is my favorite. I love to interact with my watch.
Huh.
And those things they are solid. It's actually the only movement that I can actually service completely myself.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. They are solid. And so I have one that I got in 2004, I think. So I have one that's almost 20 years old, and I actually just sent it to be serviced. Got it back. It's plus 2 seconds a day. And they're just, they're the epitome of like the Swiss, what, you know, people like to say workhorse movement. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah.
And the hand size, they're so large. It's so easy to set hands on there. And
nice.
Yeah. So, and to mount it in a case, it's two tabs and screws usually, but some cases have a little pressure fit ring that goes around it, the movement, and it's pressure fit. Doesn't move. So, nice.
So much easier.
Yeah. If you can make something with, for example, if you wanted to get Crystal Times case, chapter ring, sapphire, crown, cut to stem, if you have the ability to make something with that, you can make a 6498 Swiss watch.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. I'll do it. I mean, I do.
Twisting your arm.
It's. Well, we can talk after, like, okay, where should I buy this? Should I, you know, what's a good place? But yeah, I should check it out. And some of those movements either I've seen, they're not that expensive and they have a little bit of finishing. Yeah. They're really pretty.
There's this Seagull, which is actually pretty solid, but a lot of times they're not oiled or they're oiled improperly. It's a pretty solid movement for like $35.
Yeah.
You can buy a brand new 6498 undecorated. It's $200, but it's worth it. There's tons of parts for them. They're so simple.
Yeah.
And they've been around a long time. It used to be I'd say Unitas. People, it's probably Unitas or something like that. It was the Unitas, Unitas movements, and then they were purchased by ETA.
So yeah.
They're still out there, and you can get those with some serious degree of decoration if you really want to make something custom.
Yeah, that rings a bell that like a lot of very, you know, high-end independent watchmakers use the 6498 or maybe use it as a base and then change the whatever plates. I don't really know the parts of a watch.
Yeah, my favorite, I'm not sure how to say this, a Dutch watchmaker, and I think it's Catellar or something like that. He uses that as a base, and he makes some incredible watches.
Nice. Have you heard of a Holthenrichs? They do this 3D. I'm totally butchering their name, so I apologize to all of our Dutch listeners, but they do these 3D printed cases and 3D printed dials, and seems like it might be kind of up your alley. Have you heard of that?
No, I have 3D printed a case before, but it's not sufficiently water resistant for me. So not something that I'll go with. And getting a spring bar to stay in plastic, I just don't trust it.
Yeah.
It's eventually going to fail.
Yeah. So. They're actually like 3D printed metal cases too, which is like,
I would love that.
They're real, you know, they're really cool. They seem like they should charge more for their watches. Like they're, you know, under $10,000 or something like that.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
I was just saying, I'm sure they have more expensive ones, but.
And 3D printed bronze and 3D printed aluminum, the cost of that has really dropped.
Oh, really?
And so I think, you know, give you the ability to make a case that you absolutely could not make otherwise. You'd have things that interweave with each other that could be printed like that. But there's just no way humanly possible to make it unless you did that. So I think that would be – that's a real game changer, I think, for wristwatches when the – you know, there's a solid, nicely finished 3D printed metal watch case.
I'll send you a link. It's pretty cool stuff.
I'm excited to check that out.
So tell me more about, you mentioned like, so I think actually I'm realizing now, this is maybe more of an enterprise. Like, it sounds like you do a lot of these. It's not just for friends and family type of thing. Like, is this, I don't know, would you consider this like a business of yours, or is this something like, I just occasionally do it for, make a little money on the side to pay for my lasers and whatnot?
It's more of a hobby. It could be a business. I do. If you see something on my Instagram that's not complete, that usually was a commission for somebody. Mm-hmm. So like a watch dial that's not in a case. I either haven't made it yet or it's for somebody else. It could be a business. I have so many in the queue, but I have this problem with my psyche. I cannot work on somebody else's timeline. I don't like it. I don't enjoy it. I don't like the pressure. I just like doing it when I want to do it. So that's obviously a hurdle.
Yeah.
I do. I think that's what I will do when I retire.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it could be a viable business if I would let it, but I just prefer to make things that I like and then sell that.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I think that's the move. Right? My wife, she bakes bread. She's an amazing baker, but she's not interested in a bakery. Kind of, you know, when you turn your hobbies into your business, it seems like it takes the fun out of it a lot. So
it does a little bit. I really don't like it when somebody's pushy about things. You know, when somebody asks me how long something's going to take, and I say probably 3 weeks at the earliest, and then 2 days later, hey, any updates?
Oof.
That turns me off. I don't want to deal with that person anymore.
Gotta fire some customers.
I like that freedom, and I don't want to take that away from myself.
That's awesome.
So, but there are quite a few people that I make things for regularly. Some people that I, you know, worked with, and
nice.
And I think, you know, sometimes if you just get me at the right time, I'll make something for
somebody else. You heard it here, folks.
Yeah.
What about like these partnerships? So Crystal Times and have you done any other partnerships? How did the Crystal Times one come about even?
Jeff Newton runs Crystal Times, and they're like, it's other than that, Yoboki's guy, probably really one of the first in the game that you could buy custom crystals and things from. And he reached out to me about that. And that kind of took off with the dials. I buy a lot of parts from a lot of suppliers. I have slowly, you know, trying to make my own in a lot of things, but you know, I don't have the ability to make a 316L stainless steel case that looks good and is 350-meter water resistant. So, he reached out to me with that, and I was, you know, really appreciated that, and I have. Done some things like for Nomoki, participated in one of those, was one of the judges in their dial, design your own dial contest they had. And, I got a good relationship with Trey from Watch Mods. I actually met Trey. We live in the same state, and I was, near him for work one time, and we got together. Great, great guy. And so I try to spread it around a little bit. Toki Labs, Tokai, I'm not sure how you say that, whatever, it's the Japanese word for clock, I guess. But, he's got some great stuff and really good hands. But, if the place has something that I think, I want to make something cool with that. I like that. But I'm an Emoki affiliate, a Watch Mods affiliate, and Crystal Times affiliate. And so I have discount codes that they've provided, you know, that my customers can use, and they're on my Instagram account. But I would love to work with, you know, some of the other folks out there. There's people that I do collaborations with, and I make stuff for. Like, I really like the stuff that, I don't know if you've seen Michael Coffey at Watch Mods Crossroads. He paints his own dials.
And I don't think so.
He does really cool stuff. And, like, he does this Dragon Eye series that I really like. So the whole
I've seen those dials.
Like a dragon's eye, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, like and, the Eye of Sauron.
Yeah, well, so the Eye of Sauron he did is the I made that chapter ring. There's a
if you look
closely at it, there's a polished brass chapter ring that runs around that dial to look like the One Ring. So Michael had that idea, and I was like, oh man, I'm in. I want to do that. That's cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, something like that stuff. And I, you know, there's some other people I think are real creative, like us. Angelo in New Jersey that has the Mod Father. He has a lot of social media stuff. A lot of the cool stuff, like dials and stuff, he has great ideas. So I've made some of those dials and stuff for him. And then just, you know, there's a lot of people throughout the years that I've made stuff for that I think is cool. If it piques my interest, I usually just get hyper focused on it and go all in with it. So, you know, I think it's a good idea. I get excited.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to stay excited about anything for a really long time than, you know, any hobby. And so I think it definitely helps that, there's just the parts availability. You know, I'm relatively new to modding. I've kind of only been doing it for a year or two, but I see what you're saying, how like this explosion of options, it's just endless. And seems like it's growing every single day. It's like really amazing dials and,
There's some really high quality parts that are available. Just, you know, like those, like the Crystal Times cases, the Momoki cases, the Watch Mod cases. Those are those cases for like the basic dive watches, the 007 style cases. Those are better. Those are better quality and better finished than Seiko cases.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And yeah, and the tolerances seem to be a little bit better. And the chapter rings line up.
yeah.
So those, you know, there's some really good quality stuff, and there's some really creative people. And a lot of them are really, I love to see what they do. Like, I've always been a huge fan of Nathan at 4:44 p.m. And I loved his videos when we started kind of going down the Seiko path. A lot of his videos, I've communicated with him some, and he seems like a really great guy. And, there was, of course, you know, I think everybody that's in modding's watched the Loomshot videos, but there's just so many creative people. I just think that's a neat community to be a part of. Really,
yeah, I agree. It is kind of one of the, you know, I kind of mostly, in terms of like which modding community, like how I interface with other modders, it's like mostly the Reddit, the subreddit, the Seiko Mod subreddit, and
yeah,
it's
I'm on
great.
Too.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just so great to, you know, if you have a question, people will answer it. You never hear like, hey, did you try to Google it? Did you try to search, you know, the past posts? Like, yeah, you see the same questions pop up every month, but people just try to help out. I think it's great.
I'm having trouble with a second hand.
Yeah.
That one's popular. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't have any advice for you. You just gotta be more steady about it. You do get better
first.
Yeah. Yeah. For anybody out there that's struggling with the second hand, it gets easier. I promise. I don't know how. I don't know why.
I use Rodico.
Yeah, that's my style too. What's your collection look like? I mean, you might have. I don't know. What do you keep? What do you get rid of? Because I know you sell watches occasionally.
I do, yeah. I've probably got, I don't know, 40 or so watches. A lot of them are things that I've built. Something like, I have an Apple Watch Ultra I wear a lot. I like that. I have some just, you know, that Rolex I mentioned earlier, it was my dad's. He passed away, and I have it, and I wear it. So, And I have a Rolex Air King that my grandfather had from the 70s. I wear it occasionally. It's really, really small. I'm a big guy. Mm-hmm. And it's really small. It's like 34 millimeters.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can barely get my hand through the brown. Big hands, big wrists. I have some I have some quartz watches. I have, like the Suunto Vector. I love that. I have that. It's got it's compass and barometer and all the stuff built in that. I think that's cool as can be. I beat that. Yeah. That's my beater watch. When I don't care what happens to it, I wear that. It's kind of like my G-Shock.
Yeah.
I just got
my first G-Shock today.
Love a G-Shock.
It's I'm like, I've kind of been resisting because I'm like, this is one of those rabbit holes. Like,
It's a whole nother modding scene.
Exactly. I'm like looking up. Okay, so the OEM cases you can get from Blush. What have we done?
I've got I have two of those Marinez. I think they're called. I think it's pronounced Rawai. Rawai. It's Rawai. I think. And they're big, huge, chunky, beefy watches, kind of like Panerai's. And I have a brass and stainless. So I wear those quite a bit because I like getting custom straps for those. I've got a chronograph that I wear a lot, and that's by EMG Watches.
Mm-hmm.
And that, have you seen the story with it? That's a neat story. It's like three guys that met like on a watch forum and decided to make their own watch.
Yeah. You know, I think I've listened to a podcast recently and they like made a watch without actually talking to each other, like over the phone. Wow. It was all like via email. And one of the creators was saying that, I was like, you just didn't think to maybe just at least pick up the phone once. I mean, that's maybe it was a bit of an exaggeration. Yeah. I don't know, but,
I love that thing. I don't know what it is. It just fits me just right. Cause the sides of the case, they're curved inward toward the case back.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and it's mostly dial and has this awesome box sapphire on it. And it's really affordable. So my wife and my kids got me one for my birthday 1 year. And I just love that thing. I don't know what it is about it. It just feels just right. And it's unique. There's probably not a lot of them out there.
Yeah.
I love it.
I don't think I've seen one in person. I'll have to check it out.
I have my favorite watch. I have a Seiko SPDX 001 Marine Master.
Mm-hmm.
That's my favorite watch of all time. I love that thing. I think most people see it and they're like, it's just some other Seiko. But, you know, the watch community, they know what that thing is.
Yeah.
And, so I bought one. My cousin bought one.
Uh-huh.
But other than that, I've only seen one ever out on anybody, anywhere. Yeah. And you've seen countless Rolex Submariners. Mm-hmm. And so we were on vacation one time. I saw a guy. I was like, you wearing a Marine Master? He's like, yeah, it's a Marine Master. How do you know what that is? You know? And so I love that thing. It's just a tank. That movement in it, it's great. And that's just a really superb Seiko. And, you know, the fit and finish on it's awesome. I love, some people don't like it, but I love how thick it is. Like 15 millimeters thick with that monoblock case. Yeah. That thing, front loading. It's really a cool piece of engineering. And the prices keep going up on them, but that thing's cool.
Yeah.
I love that.
Get in while you can.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I've never held one of those, but I feel like I've heard people talk about like you don't necessarily have to have a huge wrist to pull it off. There's something about it where it just seems to just work.
It has those sculpted sides too. You get to the sides where it has this incredible cool brushing and polishing, which is that it's that what does Seiko call it? Zeratsu or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the finishing on it is like Grand Seiko level. The movement inside of it's basically a Grand Seiko movement.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get to the sides, it's sculpted to where it also narrows towards your wrist. So when you bend your arm, bend your wrist, that thing just falls perfectly in the bend.
Mm.
And a lot of people think it's top heavy, maybe. I don't really feel like that. But I wear it a lot on one of those Nick Mankey hook straps, which keeps it in place. So
nice. Yeah, that's on my list to order one of those.
Oh man, those were, as they say, the bomb.
Nice. What's next? I mean, we talked a little bit about plating, but are you? Seems like this the silver dial is kind of a newer, more exploration. Is there more to come on the silver dial front? And
yeah, I've been fooling with some applied indices, mm-hmm. Some hour markers. That's difficult to do on a dial that has like a 3D texture to it, though.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how to accomplish that just yet, unless I were to like laser a flat spot where the markers would go.
I see.
So that's so kind of what I'm doing.
The ones that you've done, I feel like I've seen you have like a cool five logo. I assume it's like kanji or something.
It's actually the Chinese character for work.
Oh.
And if you see those, that idea was from a guy in the Northeast. I don't know if he wants me to say his name or not, so I won't.
Mm-hmm.
But so he came up with the idea of these sapphire dials, and they're very thin, and you can kind of put what you want underneath them. Huh. And so I did some work for him, and you know, we kind of collaborated on some of those. And his Instagram is hypo GEAN. I don't know. It's like hypogean or something. Yeah, hypogean. Yeah, yeah. And so. We collaborated on those. You'll see some of the copper and some of the silver dials I've got on his Instagram account too.
So those that's are his idea. Your dials with there's a layer of sapphire and the indices, yeah. And there's some printing on the sapphire layer.
Yes.
Wow. I had no idea.
It's a tiny, it's thin, it's very delicate. So you have to be really, like, if you put it into a case that can't accept a little extra thickness, you can crack it.
Yeah.
Especially like something with a chapter ring that kind of floats like a 007 case. It's not really going to be an issue or something like that. But if you were to put that in a case with like a fixed chapter ring or rehaul, whatever you call it, then you really run the risk of cracking it. But it's a thin piece of sapphire with the indices are applied. And that is his logo as a reminder to work hard because it pays off, and which I love.
Okay. And it's just coincidentally, no, maybe yours are the ones that have it in the five locations. So that's a little
homaged. No, his do too. That's
his weird.
Choice. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. It just worked out.
That's funny. That's interesting.
Yeah.
It's just meant to be.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have any other collaborations coming along or anything like that? If you can talk about it.
I got some stuff coming up with Michael Coffey. I'm working on, I posted a little preview of it, a moon watch. And I'm excited to finish that thing. And when I say moon watch, I don't mean a Speedmaster. I mean a watch that looks like it's a piece of the moon.
Oh, those with the steps of the moon. I think you posted a picture. Yeah, that looks, I'm excited.
That's another product of being a 70s kid. You know, those Voyager, when I was a little boy, those two Voyager spacecraft launched. Uh-huh. And, you know, it was on in school, the stuff with Carl Sagan and the Golden Records, those things absolutely fascinated me. You know, the Challenger explosion, I was watching when that happened, and I think that's well before your time.
a little bit.
But I like space stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I turned towards this Voyager and kind of the moon stuff because the Voyager spacecraft is powering down soon.
Yeah. So
they've been in space, I don't know, 45 years or more. It's amazing. Maybe. Yeah. And they still work.
That's incredible. So, I can't believe it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I really love the space stuff, which reminds me, you asked me about my collection. I have a Bulova moon watch that I got from a NASA employee.
Oh, whoa. Cool.
And so I actually have a Bulova moon watch from a rocket scientist, which I'll never get rid of that thing. I love it. That's one awesome. Of my favorite watches. And it's just another cool quartz watch that when people see it, they know what it is. But
yeah, I want one of those too. I almost did a trade for one. It just fell through, but yeah, they seem really cool. Those big pushers.
Oh, those things are cool. The only problem with the lug to lug, a lot of people really complain not wide, I guess, but the lug to lug is really big. But it works for me because I'm a huge wrist, so
nice.
It looks fine on me. And so I have that on the new Nick Mankey NASA strap.
Oh, nice.
And it just works well.
That's perfect.
Yeah. But other collaborations, I got one I can't talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, I really kind of just like to do my own thing.
Yeah.
I like to try to be different. There's so many talented people doing Seiko mods, and that's just, mm-hmm. That's not my market.
Yeah. Are you kind of, you still doing more of the kind of engine turn guilloche stuff, or is that I've done with that. No, I moved on to the next thing.
No, that's probably been the most popular thing that I'll do. Mm-hmm. I've actually had two things that I've made in the past that were pretty quickly copied and now available from China. And so I think you probably can expect those things to maybe be on AliExpress eventually.
Oh, okay.
But I have others of those. There's a lot of stuff that I've made and I've taken photos of that I'll post. I save pictures to post on Instagram. So I have a lot of things that I've made that I haven't posted yet. And the silver, there's more silver coming.
All right, cool. I want to go back to the, so you, I mean, it's almost an honor. You had your design stolen by Chinese manufacturers.
Well, I really made it. I don't know. I started making this kind of popular. I made a bunch of them for people. It's a chapter ring for an SKX, like a 007 style case. And it's just, it doesn't have a slope to the wall. So I can make that on a lathe, or I can cut it with a laser and finish it on a lathe. And those things, I sold quite a few of those, and I put custom text on them and things like that. But now you can buy those on AliExpress, and they are from a person that I had dealt with and got some quotes actually to have those made.
Wow.
So, and I know that there's a couple, at least, of those watch companies that I've mentioned earlier, the mod parts companies, that they've had a lot of ideas stolen like that. But,
wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
There's some things people message and say, hey, how'd you do that? I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm just not telling you.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting. I guess that's bad. Corporate espionage within our little watch world.
There's a lot of that Seiko stuff, and I got sucked into it too early on, but there's so many counterfeit Seiko dials. It seems like every other post is Seiko and it's trying to look like a Rolex. And it'll say Seiko Comex Marine Master Prospect. Right. 200 meter. It's got like everything you could possibly cram on a dial, and on the side it'll have a stormtrooper helmet. So there's a lot of that going on. And every time there's a post about something like that, it starts just this flame war.
Right.
The moderator will block it, but
the long running debate. Yeah. I'm not a fan. I mean, you can get real OEM dials, why don't you just do that? You don't need these. Especially because there's so many companies like Nomoki and Lucius Atelier where they make really cool custom dials that
they don't have
the Seiko logo on them, and that's Nomoki fine. That's great.
Nomoki has some incredible dials and their logo is so cool.
Mm-hmm.
It almost looks like the percent sign. Yeah. And then like watch mods, the proportions of that watch mods and in mod mode, the proportions of those logos, those are killer logos.
Mm-hmm.
The graphics work on those, whoever did that, they're really great. And I don't know why I want to make something and then give Seiko credit for it. I put a lot of hard work into this. Look at this. I'm really proud of it.
Yeah.
But here's a dial that says Seiko. It wasn't made by Seiko. Let's give them all the credit.
Because
that's what most people think when they see it. Oh, that guy's wearing a Seiko.
Yeah. But
Yeah, great point. Like, why would you? You'd almost want people to think it's some sort of custom job, not yet another Seiko.
Exactly.
B A B C 1 2 3. what else? I feel like we covered a lot. I don't know. Is there anything else you want to discuss or anything else I'm missing?
Covered a lot.
Yeah.
Let's see.
I guess maybe a little like, you know, because I'm really curious about like the early days, like when all it was like Bill Yao and like maybe the Dagaz guy and just like, you know, it was were you talking to other people about it? Was it just kind of like, okay, you know, email Bill and he'll give you some instructions and then you just figured it out on your own? Was it on a watch you seek or some forum? How'd you commune back then?
I was on timezone.com.
Uh-huh.
And when I started, that was the place. It's kind of like what Watch You Seek has become.
Mm-hmm.
But timezone.com was a really rich community of, you know, people with a lot of knowledge about watches. And occasionally you'd have a watchmaker in there that really knew what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And you could ask that person questions. A lot of times they're very helpful. And so Bill Yao is very helpful. I think, you know, he's doing his own thing now. You can't get mod parts from him. His stuff's incredible.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I would experiment. You know, you couldn't get replacement stuff. So I had this this set of hands from Bill, and I pressed them on with a Bic, the inside of a Bic ballpoint pen. And I thought, you know, here we go. I'm going to ruin this watch.
Uh-huh.
And it worked. You know? So it was difficult to find anything custom. So that's why I was doing, you know, the filing down with cases and things like that.
Uh-huh.
And this kind of, you know, I wish I had there. I do have some pictures of the first 007 that I modded.
Oh,
know?
That's cool.
They're from like December of 2000 or something like that, maybe. But you couldn't get anything. You couldn't get a crystal gasket for 007 back then. So
right,
you just
stuck
with the Harblex, or you hoped you could reuse what was in it.
Yeah.
And so I resorted to, you know, trying to customize cases. And I don't know how many times I've tried to turn a 007 into a pocket watch that actually, like a pocket watch that takes 007 bezels. You change the inserts, the crystals, the case backs. I just think, I don't know if people would buy that. You mostly have to manual, you know, wind it.
So you want a rotating bezel pocket watch, like a diver pocket watch. That sounds awesome.
Yeah. I mean, we're not using dive watches for diving most of
the
time.
Yeah. That's true.
If I want to time a parking meter with my pocket watch 007, I won't be able to do that.
I'm so, surprised it hasn't worked out yet, I guess.
It hasn't. And I've got so many just ruined old cases from trying to turn them on a lathe. And like the 007, you know, where the strap or bracelet meets the case, it has that indentation. And so it kind of curves toward the case back right there.
Yeah.
So that's the problem with that case.
Yeah.
I did see a guy, which I thought was a great idea. You know, the Moki has that SRPE replacement case, and they have the pilot version, but it's not wire lugs, but it's really thin lugs.
Uh-huh.
So he cut those off and kind of sanded it, and he made a pocket watch out of it.
Wow.
So I thought that was pretty cool. So, you know, somebody beat me to that one, but
that's awesome.
I have been talking to a guy. There's a guy in Arizona named Peter. I think you pronounce his last name is Kazubski. And he has PK Horology. He makes some of the coolest cases. And I've gotten some titanium Damascus dials from him. And I got some Damascus steel from him. And I've traded him stuff. And
nice.
And he just made actually a watch with a dial that I made, a religious style.
I saw that. Yeah, that was beautiful. Yeah.
And I've talked to him about making one out of brass because he makes these pressure fit case backs. So I think that's a possibility. You know, he kind of had those old pressure fit on some pocket watches too. Mm-hmm. So
is maybe this like one day. Do you have to have the water resistance on this pocket watch? Is that something?
I would prefer
30 meters. Yeah.
Just something. So if it's in my pocket and I'm sweaty, it doesn't get condensation in it.
Yeah.
You know, for pocket watch.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think I could pay some company to make a SK compatible pocket watch. Probably have to order who knows how many cases just to make it viable.
Right.
And then probably I would be stuck with the majority of them because people wouldn't buy them.
It's pretty niche. It's pretty niche.
But I would have product. My pocket watch.
It might be worth it. You know, lifelong dream fulfilled. Yeah. And it's funny. That PK Horology. So we do an Instagram at the end, an Instagram recommendation at the end. And my, the last podcast, my recommendation was PK Horology. I just think he's like, you know, this trend of like small cases. He's just like, nah. Like we're going nuts. Like we're gonna have edges, stars. They're gonna be gigantic. The tiger stripes, the Timascus stuff is so cool. I think it's great.
He's made a case out of Makume,
what's that?
Yeah, I think it's a combo of silver and copper. It's a fused metal. It's pretty expensive actually, and it's hard to work with. But I've been trying to buy sheets of it. But I can't find sheets that are thin enough. But it that's kind of where you end up with that. It's like a rose gold kind of white tiger stripe pattern. That's Makume, and those things I think are so cool. And I've tried it and failed. I don't know how many times, but it takes some serious talent to turn your own watch case on a lathe. You know, one that's not 3D printed, it's not CNC milled. I mean, he is taking measurements with dial calipers, and he's doing things with those cases to get the tolerances right to accept a crystal gasket and press a crystal in it. That's impressive to me. I love that. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of things that I absolutely love. And I talk to him a lot. He's been very, very helpful to me. He's a really nice fellow.
That's awesome.
And that is impressive to me. That's next level kind of stuff to be able to. I mean, you know, all he needs is a movement in hands. The rest of it he can make himself. You know.
Yeah, and being able to hand make a case and the tolerances required, like that's incredible stuff. I think it's amazing.
Yeah, impressive guy.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of people like that. We can talk about the Instagram accounts at the end. So.
Yeah. I feel like. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you. So yeah, let's at the end of all these episodes, we always have an Instagram recommendation. So why don't we start with you, Ron? Who's someone that we should all be following?
Well, I mentioned Nathan at 444.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to see a lot of quality stuff with a lot of OEM parts, it's kind of to me, the quintessential Seiko modder. That's kind of, you know, where I would look at. There's another guy I haven't seen much lately. It was Watch Mod CA, and it was Scott something, but Canadian based that did a lot of stuff similar to Nathan. But yeah, I think everybody should follow Nathan. if you want to see Seiko mods and get ideas, then he's got thousands and thousands of followers, and he does great stuff.
And that's the 444.
Yeah, 4:44 p.m. Yep.
Yeah, so it's the all spelled out 4:40_4_p.m. Check it out. Really beautiful things. Awesome. And then my recommendation is this guy. I think his name's Mike. I'll just spell it out because it's kind of a confusing. MICKEMECHANIC. So Mikey Mechanic. And he does these like laser cut into what looks like brass, as far as I can tell, like guilloche. It's just designs. And then he'll show a little video of what I assume is like the laser doing its work. And so like when you were saying earlier, like, oh, you can't have if you give two lines crossing each other, which I didn't really realize, like, gosh, that makes laser works really complicated. To design the file to be able to do it all. Like, yeah, that sounds hard. Anyway, he's got these little videos that accompany each one of the dials that he does that shows I guess it's the file that would do the lasering. You know, I always love seeing like not just the end product, but like what kind of goes into it as well.
Yeah.
So check that.
Yeah, me too. That's how you learn how to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just a little bit about FifthRisk. FifthRisk is a platform for enthusiasts and buy enthusiasts. If you want to join, contribute, or write reviews, or even come on the podcast, feel free to reach out. You can follow FifthRisk on Facebook or Instagram. Feel free to like and subscribe the podcast, leave a review. We also have a Slack group. If you want to join that, you can send an email to contact@fifthrisk.com. Please get on Instagram and follow Red 5 Watchworks, R-E-D, the number 5, WATCHWORKS, to see some of his amazing things. And if you'd like to follow me, my name is Matt. You can see me at dad.watch on Instagram. Thanks so much. It's been a pleasure to speak with you, Ron. Appreciate it.
It's nice speaking with you too, Matt. I appreciate you taking the time and asking me.
Have you made an honest review? Jump onto fifthrisk.com and read real takes by real owners about their watches. And of course, get involved and write about what's on your wrist. Fifthrisk.com is your independent space to talk watches.